Welcome to this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week, as we bring you the top news stories from this past week impacting Indiana's most important industry, agriculture. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and coming up on the show, you'll be hearing from our award-winning news team.
I'm Greg Allen. A revised trade agreement among the U.S., Canada, and Mexico could bring major opportunities for agriculture. Also, you'll hear how Indiana pork producers are taking aim at food insecurity across the state, one meal at a time.
And I'm Andy Eubank. Going into Christmas on Wednesday, we had a nice boost in the corn, bean, and wheat markets. Not the case on Friday. Very quiet. We'll get analysis from Brian Bastin coming up shortly. I will also have a preview of the upcoming Commodity Classic late February.
Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin says it's going to get downright cold once again in your Indiana farm forecast. Also, this is our final edition of Hoosier Ag This Week for 2025. We'll take a look back at some of the biggest news stories that we covered for you throughout this past year. As we kick off today's show, $37 billion. That's the projected ag trade deficit for fiscal year 2026, according to an update earlier this week from USDA. But that's a decrease from the record ag trade deficit we saw in fiscal year 2025 of $43.7 billion.
We know that tariffs have had impacts on U.S. exports.
And that's Dr. Darren Hudson, director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness at Texas Tech University.
And across the board, whether we're talking about soybeans, corn, obviously soybeans was the big loser. Corn less so, but it was a negative impact.
However, he says the tariffs have not put a dent in consumers' buying patterns, and the demand for imported products remains high.
The price was going up. The landed value or price that the consumer was going to pay was going up, but so was volume. And, you know, that's a little bit strange when you think about it that way. It indicates a bit of insensitivity of the U.S. consumer to those prices. The tariff impact on, say, your shirt that you bought at the store was small enough that people really didn't notice that.
Hudson adds that the market remains strong for many U.S. ag products.
On net, yes, I think the tariffs probably hurt exports some, but really are not hurting those imports coming back. So there's some strength in that demand side, or at least consistency in that demand side.
Read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, speaking of trade, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement is set for review in 2026, and ag leaders say the renegotiation could bring about major opportunities for the ag industry. Greg Allen has more.
USMCA governs trade between the three largest trading partners in North America. And for U.S. farmers, Mexico and Canada remain two of the most important export markets for corn, soybeans, meat, and dairy products. According to Dave Salmonson, Senior Director of Government Relations for the American Farm Bureau Federation,
the U.S. Trade Representative's Office has solicited comments from all kinds of people in industry, what they think of the opportunities for changes in the agreement. Our trade representative, Ambassador Greer, has been briefing the various committees on what the objectives of the government will be going forward.
Salmonson says improvements to the agreement could mean fewer barriers, smooth exports, and stronger demand for U.S. products, especially at a time when global competition is increasing.
We were not satisfied with how Canada implemented any improvements in dairy product access from the U.S. in the USMCA. We also have had problems over the many years with seasonal import surges, primarily seasonal produce from Mexico. That is what we want to see addressed when the countries come together.
While negotiations are still a year away, producers and commodity organizations are already urging lawmakers to modernize USMCA in ways that support long-term growth, stability, and profitability for American agriculture.
The folks from the various trade and other agencies, their governments will get together to work on the issues, prepare hopefully an agreement that they can discuss in July. And in Congress, we'll expect hearings from the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate from the Finance Committee, perhaps other committees.
For farmers, the 2026 review could turn into a win for all of North America. Find more on this story at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Greg Allen.
Thank you, Greg. As we pivot now to the grain markets and with a report on how they performed on Friday, here's Andy Eubank.
Thank you, CJ. We had a minor sell-off on Friday with light volume again the day after Christmas. Final numbers coming up. We'll begin, though, with market insights, and I turn to Brian Basting for that. Brian is with Advanced Trading. Markets were pretty solid on Wednesday, Christmas Eve, a short session going into the Christmas Day break. And Brian, as we get back to trade, whisper quiet on Friday. That is not much of a surprise.
Not much of a surprise at all. Thanks for having me, Andy. As we wrap up the year here, the volume is light, and I think we'll continue to see that the last two or three days here of December, trading days. And the markets are just kind of consolidating and kind of getting arms around the South American situation. And I do think we'll continue to see quiet activity as we move into those final few days of December. And we look ahead to the January reports from USDA.
Was there anything at play when we saw that Wednesday rally, which was a bit of a surprise, but it's always a possibility in that light volume?
Just such a tremendous steep decline, for example, Andy, in the bean market since just prior to Thanksgiving. I think we just saw some short covering on Wednesday. People, if you will, took some money off the table ahead of the Christmas holiday. And it just was enough to give us a mini boost, but it's kind of a feeble rebound, if you will, when you're looking at the volume of trading, the volume of declines, I should say, we'd seen prior to that. So I wouldn't read too much into that at this point.
And as we get set for yet another partial week of trade leading into New Year's Day, volume expected to continue light, and what should we look for as any influences on the markets?
I don't ever want to approach the market too casually. And yeah, there's always surprises out there. In this case, they might be more geopolitically linked as you wrap up the calendar year. For example, any developments in the Black Sea region of a peace agreement, we all hope that is eventually reached, but that would be something that would be a wild card. So I just encourage everyone to at least stay engaged with the markets. But having said that, the conditions in Brazil are nearly ideal for their bean crop down there. They're favorable for the Argentina crop, albeit it's still a ways to go before we get into extreme pollination and get into pod set and pod fill for the beans, probably more so in January there. Regardless, though, it's hard to build a case for weather rally, but market will watch the weather still in South America if anything changes there, more so for Argentina at this point. We'll be watching the daily export sales wires for any changes there. If we see some buying for the end of the year here. But I think beyond that, I think there's a possibility it will be light volume.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. We appreciate his commentary. If you'd like to chat things over with him, the number is 309-664-2314. Final numbers now from Friday trade, down just a penny on the March corn, 450 even. May, 458 and a quarter, down three quarters. July down a quarter at 464 and a quarter, up just a little in September and December corn. 4.5 lower January beans, 10.58 and three quarters. March, 10.72 and a half, down four. May loses 3 1/4, dipping to 10.84 and a quarter. And March wheat, 5.19, that was down 2 3/4. The meat markets were mixed. February live cattle, 229.65, up $1.10. And February lean hogs, 84.52, 52 cents lower. You are up to date now on the markets. Much more is still on the way on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
You look at farming, and it breaks. I grew up on a farm, obviously, right? And I see there's not any more farm ground made. Right? It goes away every day. I mean, as we're sitting here, there's acres going to something.
Yeah.
Buildings, something. Rural, whatever. Mm-hmm. So we got to be more efficient with our dirt,
yeah.
Especially in the United States. You look at the world, though, and you look at what Brazil and Argentina, what they're capable of, mm-hmm. looking at their footprint of, you know, they can put on production the size of the state of Texas, right?
Right.
That's amazing that they could do that. So, but here in the U.S., yeah, we got what we have, so we have to be more efficient. with our acres.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your Indiana Farm Forecast on Hoosier Ag this week is brought to you by the Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin says enjoy the warmer temperatures this weekend while you still can.
Tell you what, Mother Nature definitely showing her bipolar side over the course of the past few days. We've had rain. You go a little bit farther north into Michigan, you had crippling ice in spots of Michigan. Now we've got way above normal temperatures for most of the weekend, and then we've got a massive cold front that wants to come through for the turn of the year, actually for the finish of this weekend. Let's kind of walk through it here. It's going to be an up and down affair, but here's what we've got right now. For your Saturday and Sunday, we're looking at above normal temperatures for the entire eastern Corn Belt. Southwest flow dominating today. I think not only are we dry, but I think we see decent sunshine trying to work through the clouds for your Saturday. Then clouds thicken overnight, and then we have a rain that tries to work through the Hoosier State with a frontal passage tomorrow into early Monday. We are going to be staying in the warm sector with southwest flow all the way through Sunday. Rain showers start in northern Indiana, fill in central and south through the afternoon and evening. Overnight, the front sweeps through everywhere, and by the time we wake up on Monday morning, we're going to be looking at a significant 30 to 40 degree drop in temperatures, and we stay chilly through the rest of the week next week. All right, precipitation first. Quarter to 1 inch is what I'm expecting as we come through the Sunday, early Monday time frame. Coverage 100%. Temperatures are going to do no better than the lower 30s, likely, maybe even 20s on Monday the 29th. And we see strong north winds coming across the Great Lakes. What does that do? You guessed it, lake effect cloud cover in a lot of places, and lake effect snow will be seen in the northern quarter to northern third of Indiana, especially up in Michigan as well. So if you're planning on traveling north, be ready for that. Lake effect holds into Tuesday, but the winds diminish. Arctic high pressure is here. I think the coldest days will be Monday and Tuesday. Temperatures ease a little bit Wednesday, but the rest of the week we don't get into warm air. We are then seeing a slow sagging boundary. That means winds stay relatively strong out of the west and northwest, and temperatures stay below normal for New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and even into the second. Now into the weekend of the third and fourth, we do see some warmer air trying to lift up. I think it gets capped a little bit for the weekend, and now looking at that bringing rain for the start of the following week, the fifth into the sixth, rain and potential wet snow hopefully there to start the week, and then we dry down but stay chilly through the rest of that first full week of January. The mild air that Mother Nature has brought us over the past few days will not hold. I'm looking for January to be normal to below normal on temperatures for the first 15 days all the way through. That's the way your forecast is stacking up. I'm Ryan Martin.
While snow may cover Indiana's soil and water, Hoosier farmers know the great treasure that lies out of sight. As we move through the holidays, know that the Indiana Agriculture Nutrient Alliance values you as an integral part of Indiana agriculture. However you contribute to viable farms, healthy soil, and clean water. IANA and its partners stand ready to help in 2026 as you manage expensive nutrients successfully and plan for next season. Well, I trust you all had a very Merry Christmas. I'm Greg Allen, starting the second half of Hoosier Ag This Week. And as we gear up for the new year, many ag producers remain concerned about what the MAHA movement might mean for the industry. Eric Pfeiffer has more.
It's a lot bigger than most people think.
And that's Scott Hayes, executive director with the Missouri Pork Association, who says the concern is what restrictions might be placed on popular pork products could be considered ultra-processed.
When we hear ultra-processed foods, we all think about the stuff that's real close to the cash register at the convenience store. I think we can all agree on that, but it runs a lot deeper than that.
Hayes says some within the MAHA movement are promoting what's called the NOVA definition, which would label several pork favorites as ultra-processed.
Under that definition, sausages, possibly even some bacons, could end up in the ultra-processed category. And so we start to have a problem with that when you don't consider the nutritional value. You just talk about the amount of processing something has as the only unit of measure. You're leaving a lot of important information out.
Hayes explains why the ultra-processed definition that is finally settled upon could have far-reaching implications for producers.
We've used processing for years for food safety reasons, for shelf life reasons, and we need to continue that. What some folks don't realize is the MAHA movement actually could even dig back into animal feeds. So we have some concerns there.
Ace says the pork industry is actively engaged in conversations with various federal agencies as discussions continue. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Eric. Come February, there will be a 30-year celebration of the largest farmer-led and farmer-focused event in the U.S. Andy Eubank has the story.
Commodity Classic returns to San Antonio at the end of February for three full days of programming in the Early Riser, Learning Center, and What's New sessions, in addition to over 400 exhibitors on two levels of the massive trade show.
Commodity Classic is kind of like that highlight of the year for the industry to get together, for growers to understand and learn more about what they're doing. You know, what's on the cutting edge, what the industry is, like, you know, trending towards.
That's First Vice President of National Corn Growers Association, Matt Frostick. Classic is organized by members of NCGA, along with American Soybean Association, National Association of Wheat Growers, National Sorghum Producers, and the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
The committee does a great job of putting a great venue together and having a great experience. And it's always been a great experience. You bring back knowledge to your farm that you can use, and just the ability to talk and learn from other farmers in the room is so important. A lot of great industry leaders that will be there that you can touch base with or learn from, and just kind of feel the pulse and the way of the future is there.
Talk to almost any farmer who has attended in the past, and they'll tell you they like the access to important people available at the trade show exhibits.
So that's one of the cool things about Classic is the industry businesses, companies, they bring in the engineers or the people that have designed some of this equipment, and you get to talk to them. And that's one of the cool things about being there, is you really get to understand where they're headed with the equipment, what they've done to improve it, that type of thing. It's just not, a salesman there. Not that salesmen aren't important, but I mean, it's, you really get to understand the build of a lot of that stuff. And so I think a lot of growers lean into that and feel that that's important, the ones that do attend.
Register now at commodityclassic.com for the 2026 event, February 25th through 27th. Rates will go up January 14th. I'm Andy Eubank.
And thank you, Andy. Indiana Pork is taking aim at food insecurity across the state, one meal at a time. The organization is coordinating donations of high-quality pork to food banks and pantries, helping families put nutritious protein on the table.
One of the We Care principles that our Indiana pig farmers live by is community service, and that includes giving back to food pantries, churches, backpack programs, wherever there is the need.
That's Director of Communications for Indiana Pork, Jeanette Merritt.
Our Indiana pig farmers have, for the past couple of years, done a program with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, where for every pork tenderloin that was sold during the summer, we would donate a ground pork meal to their local food pantry. We replicated that program this year with the South Bend Cubs, and for every pork item that was sold in one of their concession stands, we donated a ground pork meal. We were able to donate 2,000 meals to the Food Bank of Northern Indiana at a time where they told us protein is incredibly hard to come by.
During the holiday season, Indiana pork farmers have also stepped up with donations of hams to help families celebrate with a traditional meal. Merritt says the effort reflects more than just agriculture. It's about service. Farmers see feeding their neighbors as part of their responsibility, not just their profession.
As farmers, we have a backyard full of food, and we know that 1 in 5 kids go to bed hungry every night, 1 in 6 adults are hungry. The food insecurity issue is not going away. No matter, as many donations as we can give, people still need help. And as farmers, we feel it is our duty to feed people. We like to say farmers feed our neighbors. And the need, as long as it's there, farmers will continue to provide and try to help.
As food insecurity continues to challenge communities statewide, Indiana Pork says it remains committed to being part of the solution through partnerships, donations, and a shared goal of making sure no Hoosier goes hungry. The Indiana State Fair Commission, which oversees the year-round operation of the Indiana State Fairgrounds and Events Center and the annual Indiana State Fair, has named Ray Allison as its next executive director. He will succeed Cindy Hoy upon her retirement in March of 26. In his current role as Chief Operating Officer, Allison oversees the Indiana State Fair Foundation, strategic planning initiatives, and campus development projects. In 2023, he was appointed to the Executive Committee of the International Association of Fairs and Expos Board of Directors and will serve as Board Chair in 2026. Hoosier Ag Today congratulates Ray Allison, and we wish you much success on this new endeavor. I'm Greg Allen, and don't go anywhere. More Hoosier Ag This Week is coming your way.
Attention construction pros. Purple Wave Auction brings quality equipment to your fingertips. Join our bi-weekly online auctions featuring dozers, excavators, loaders, and more. We provide detailed listings, photos, and seller contact info. Inspect online or in person. With our no reserve policy, every item sells to the highest bidder. Visit purplewave.com today and see why informed builders choose Purple Wave. Transparent processes, real deals, your next great purchase awaits. purplewave.com.
Show your support for Indiana FFA by attending the Blue and Gold Gala. It's Saturday, February 28th at the Barn at Bay Horse Inn in Greenwood. The evening begins with a cocktail reception and silent auction at 5, dinner at 6, and a live auction to cap off the night. All proceeds benefit Indiana FFA. Join us as we support ag education and career development for Indiana's next generation of ag leaders. For more information and to reserve your seats, visit INFFA.org.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And as we wind down 2025, we take a look back now at some of the biggest news stories that had a major impact on Indiana's farmers and the ag industry this year. And we start with President Trump and his return to the White House for another term.
Our new trade policy will also be great for the American farmer. I love the farmer.
And that was President Trump during his speech to a joint session of Congress back in early March. It was during that speech that Trump even warned America's farmers about his new tariff strategy before it was even unveiled.
It may be a little bit of an adjustment period. We had that before when I made the deal with China, $50 billion of purchases. And I said, just bear with me. And they did. They did probably have to bear with me again.
Then on April 2nd, from the White House Rose Garden, Trump announced he was imposing reciprocal tariffs on U.S. trading partners. He said those taxes on imports would range anywhere between 10 to 46%.
With today's actions, we're also standing up for our great farmers and ranchers. Brutalized by nations all over the world. Brutalized.
The reciprocal tariffs led to a trade war with China, who stopped buying U.S. soybeans altogether back in May. It wasn't until early November that the U.S. reached a new trade agreement with China, but by that time, the price of soybeans had fallen sharply.
The trade battle with China is really something that basically languished the market. The market was languished for several months as that battle went back and forth.
And that's Brian Basting, commodity research analyst with Advanced Trading.
And the interesting thing about that was when the deal was finally signed there in mid-October, we had about a 30-day rally. And boy, that rally was wiped out quickly in just 30 days. So from mid-October to mid-November, about $1.50 rally. And now in mid to late December, it's nearly back where it was in mid-October. So the lesson there is change happens and can be very fast.
In early December, the Trump administration introduced a $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program to help those farmers who were negatively impacted by tariff-related market disruptions.
This country and our farm economy is facing a crisis that we inherited that most of these farmers have not seen in their lifetime.
And that's U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins. She said of the $12 billion in farm aid, $11 billion will go to America's row crop farmers, while the remaining $1 billion will be held back for farmers who produce specialty crops such as pumpkins, watermelons, or tomatoes.
The money will move by February 28th of 2026, but by the end of this month, so just in the next couple of weeks, every farmer that is able to apply for it will know exactly what that number looks like.
Another major ag news story in 2025 was the announcement that USDA would be moving many of their agencies and employees out of Washington, D.C. When Hoosier Ag Today first reported that story in early May, a contingency of Indiana ag leaders worked together to put together a proposal for Indianapolis to be a new home for USDA. Those ag leaders traveled to Washington and met with Secretary Rollins.
And so part of the goal, too, was also to let her know that if they were ever serious about doing that and had some people that they'd like to move out of D.C., that Indianapolis would sure be a great spot for them to land. It'd be great to have that group and a part of that group in Indianapolis as well, and really just kind of pitching how great our state is for agriculture.
And that's Don Lamb, director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. The pitch that the Indiana ag leaders gave to Secretary Rollins worked. In late July, USDA selected Indianapolis as one of five future regional hub locations. During her visit to Indianapolis for the National FFA Convention in late October, Secretary Rollins told Hoosier Ag Today about that decision and the future move to Indianapolis.
I want to give a big shout out to Don Lamb, who is part of a contingency that came to talk to me a couple of months ago about this and made an extremely compelling case about how important Indianapolis is and what just a mecca of research and industry and talent and intellect and farming that is here in this part of the country. So it became a pretty easy decision for us. We're excited to get USDA to Indianapolis.
USDA Deputy Secretary Stephen Vaden tells Hoosier Ag Today that move to Indianapolis will likely begin this coming summer.
We're going to be moving people there, but we're keeping our employees in mind. We want to ensure that we're going to be the least disruptive to their lives as possible. And part of that includes taking account of the school year. We want the children of those employees who will move to be able to complete their school year here in the Washington, D.C. area and then be in place in time to take part in their new school system and their new home going forward.
USDA has not yet announced which agencies or employees will be making the move to Indianapolis, nor have they announced where those offices in Indianapolis will be located. Hoosier Ag Today will certainly let you know when more of those details are made available here in 2026. And with that, we close up shop on this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. And from all of us at Hoosier Ag Today, we wish you and all of your loved ones all of the best in the new year. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Greg Allen, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.